You ain't expect this, it's not who you think. I promise you we mean it. We can make you a native
and again.
Overnight. Make it. You can take your life. No, spin it around. Native gun. Let me get my breath for this one.
If you a trooper, take that chance. Go to rallies and yell them chants. You gotta find a way to bring it back to living your life inside of a Japanese internment camp. That's the way you gotta think these days. Pull pants on a frag grenade. For the kids, you gotta make the world a better place and give them a little taste of that social change. Ask your mama why she thinks she can.
Welcome to the Voices from the Frontline segment of the 4 o'clock Public Affairs Hour on KPFK Radio, 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara, and streaming on the web for the world at www.kpfk.org. I'm Tammy Bang Lu, and I'm your host for today. We're going to be spending the hour on Asians and hip-hop, discussing the intersection of hip-hop, urban struggle, and culture as a weapon. Joining us is Jeff Chang, writer and journalist on the topics of race, culture, and politics, and his latest books, Can't Stop, Won't Stop, and Total Chaos, The Art and Aesthetics of Hip-Hop. He'll be followed by Geologic from Seattle-based hip-hop group Blue Scholars. And then joining us in studios, we've got our very own Los Angeles spoken word and hip-hop artist, Skim. Stay tuned, and we'll be right back with Jeff Chang.
I can make you a native gun overnight. We live that struggling life. Grab a weapon and join this fight. Kiwi, let go of that knife. I can make you revolutionary overnight.
Hey, fool, give me back that knife. Matter of fact, let me hold this mic. Somebody say turn on the light. I'ma get all of my people to organize. We struggling for our lives. We fighting for our rights. Pick the fruit when you know it's right. Cause the revolution won't happen overnight.
So for our first segment, we'd like to welcome Jeff Chang to the show. Jeff Chang is a founding editor of Color Lines magazine and a senior editor and director of Russell Simmons 360 hiphop.com. In 1993, he co-founded and ran the influential hip-hop indie label Soul Sides, now Quantum Projects. He speaks on his latest book, Can't Stop, Won't Stop, A History of the Hip-Hop Generation, and Total Chaos, The Art and Aesthetics of Hip-Hop. Welcome, Jeff.
Thanks for having me.
Can't Stop, Won't Stop is just an amazing history of the hip-hop generation, and you talk about it as the three decades starting in 1968 and really going into the urban struggle and how that created hip-hop, or hip-hop being a response to the politics of abandonment and a politics of containment. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about that a little bit?
The book Can't Stop, Won't Stop describes the history of the hip-hop generation as a way of talking about the shifts that occur in politics, you know, during that particular period, and as well how we, the folks that grew up during that era, reacted to that. And hip-hop, of course, hip-hop culture was one of those reactions, but the two sort of major themes that you kind of see happening in American politics since the late 60s are, one, this sort of rolling up and abandoning people of color and communities of color wholesale. And then once you've surplused a lot of the young people out of the system, then inventing a whole bunch of laws, a battery of different types of laws to then contain them, to limit their access to public space. So, you know, anti-cruising ordinances or sweep ordinances that are about trying to get young people off the corners or just hanging out, you know, just having fun or just being in public space. And then, you know, pretty much rounding them up and putting them into prison industrial complex that's conditioned upon the expansion, on its expansion, by rounding up more and more bodies of color. So that's essentially what the book is kind of looking at, is that shift in politics. And of course, our reaction to that in many ways has been seen through the culture that we've created, because it's given us an outlet to be able to push back during a time of political retrenchment to sort of advance ideas of how to resist and how to continue the struggles that previous generations, you know, had fought for. So that, in a nutshell, is kind of what the book is about.
Mm. I mean, we do see even the vestiges of it now, and the criminalization of black and brown life or urban life in general. In California, we've got thousands more laws on the books since the 80s. And so people are getting criminalized for things that didn't exist prior to that. I mean, so one of the things is you really talk a lot about just the the change in the Bronx specifically. Can you talk a little bit about that in the sense that hip-hop was born out of the Bronx? Just what was going on in that city at that time?
Well, you know, the Bronx section of New York experiences what happens in pretty much all the inner cities throughout America at the same time. There's a combination of deindustrialization, so a lot of jobs are being lost. There's massive white flight, and the two, of course, are not coincidental, and in many cases they're interlinked. And you know, and then finally, the third kind of part of that is government disinvestment. You know, and in New York City, they called it planned shrinkage, which meant to describe a policy of withdrawing money, withdrawing services, withdrawing care from places like the Bronx and Brooklyn as well, large parts of Brooklyn, Lower Manhattan. You know, you talk about Queens as well, Western Queens. So you know, it's a situation where these types of trends come together to create these abandoned neighborhoods. And within it, kids are wanting to, of course, always create. Kids are going to try to have fun. Kids are going to try to, you know, fill their lives with joy and excitement, novelty, that kind of thing. And so hip-hop begins really as a way for young people to have fun. It's not explicitly a political movement, you know, like the Civil Rights Movement, like the Black Power Movement. But it comes into play amidst a series of very important political rollbacks or reactions to, backlashes to the Civil Rights and the Black Power Movement. So that's why it's impossible to talk about the hip-hop generation without talking about, you know, the struggles of the 60s and the struggles of before and how those things change. And I think that to a large extent, for instance, for me when I was writing the book, and before that, I think a lot of the catalyst for me was having kind of like very tortured conversations with elder organizers or folks in the community who just didn't understand hip-hop and understood, I think, maybe in some ways how things had changed, but didn't necessarily understand that young people are, you know, going to have different types of reactions to the way things had changed than did previous generations. And so there's a lot of downing of people, you know, people, older folks saying, you know, hip-hop folks, young folks just don't get it, or they're anti-revolutionary, they're anti-progressive, they're not radical enough, and always trying to measure young people up against the struggles of the 60s. And so Can't Stop, Won't Stop came from, you know, this sort of very tortured discussion of like, look, you know, things are much different now. The ground is completely shifted under our feet. And so this is what it is. This is, you know, this is where it's coming from, and this is why we've gone the way that we've gone.
Whether or not, you know, hip-hop is revolutionary, I think the power of hip-hop was the ability to convey the experience, the urban experience in its rawness. So at its best, like Public Enemy and just the stories of the realness in terms of the racism inside the community or the national oppression or, as you said, going up against the cops. So the power of hip-hop was the ability to convey that experience and speak to a whole generation or, you know, three generations.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think one of the things that's happened is that hip-hop in some ways has become a victim of its own success. I just think of the way that I saw media during the 80s when I was growing up. And I grew up in Honolulu, Hawaii, which is, you know, majority, minority state, whatever that means anymore, you know. But still, the dominant images of young people of color were criminalized kids, or, you know, just marginalized kids, or even if they were on TV, period, you know what I mean? On the radio or anything like that. In the media, there was just a lack of images of young people of color. So when hip-hop came along, seeing folks kind of jump in there, do their own thing, that was really empowering for me, and I think for millions of other kids, not just in the U.S., but around the world. And one of the things that hip-hop has done is it's changed quite literally the color of media entertainment, you know, so that it's natural now for, you know, we think it's sort of second nature for anybody that's trying to do anything with a new culture to whether it be advertisers or or folks trying to, you know, market a record, that you would have, you know, images of crowds of people or fans or people participating in it that are culturally and racially diverse. And I think that's been one of the successes. We've achieved what folks in the civil rights movement, folks in the multiculturalism movement during the 80s only dreamed about. But in some ways, you know, we've lost hold of it. You know, that's I think, you know, one of the major issues that we face now, that multiculturalism has become sort of a passé. It's a bad word because it's been co-opted by big media entertainment complexes. Hip-hop made it possible, you could argue, for the U.S., the American media entertainment complex to go global. You know, the fact that now you had images of young people of color, and dominantly in the world, young people are not white and suburban and from, you know, the U.S. So hip-hop made it possible for the industry to be able to shift and reach these global types of audiences. And now we've got to deal with the consequences and the ramifications of that. You know, is hip-hop, the big debate is now, is hip-hop cultural imperialism by another form in the face of with a face that's you know, darker and supposedly more benevolent. That's, I think, a big debate that needs to be had within hip-hop now.
Mm. You're listening to Voices from the Frontlines on KPFK. We're talking with Jeff Chang, author of Can't Stop, Won't Stop, A History of the Hip-Hop Generation and Total Chaos, The Art and Aesthetics of Hip-Hop. The previous conversation of what you were talking about, I think the ability for the face of the images coming out of the United States, or even in terms of mainstream media through the influence of hip-hop, we often see then the limitations of identity politics, right? That you have faces that are darker, browner, blacker, but that doesn't necessarily translate into liberation or revolution or total social transformation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but at the same time, you know, I somewhat agree with that, and I somewhat don't. I mean, it's for people that want to discount quote unquote identity politics. A lot of times, I think they're in denial about the importance of race and class in the discussion. And there's this tendency for folks to kind of write off the 80s and the 90s as this sort of dark period for the left or for, you know, for the radical progressive movement or whatever you want to call it, as one that was rent by these divisions of people that just wanted to talk about their self-esteem. And I think that's just, you know, that's false. That's wrong. It's important for folks to understand that these things are deeply racialized, and what could be more powerful than for, you know, capital to have a bunch of faces of the most disenfranchised people representing it. Mm-hmm. You know, there's nothing more powerful than that, and I think that it's important for us to kind of come to terms with the way that these images are racialized, and the way to do that is not to deny that race, you know, is important. It's to comprehend it in a much, much deeper kind of way than the debates in the past have allowed people to do. Now, on the other hand, it's important to be able to say that the old way of understanding race is as far as, you know, sort of folks, you know, empowering their particular communities in and of themselves is not useful to the conversation anymore. You know, we live obviously in a situation in which, you know, demographics have changed very quickly, and you see this, of course, in Los Angeles. And I think the left, the radical progressive movement, has been also unable to deal with, you know, questions of how race plays out in terms of capital, you know, inflaming tensions between communities of color. And so I think for me, those are the most important issues that we face these days. And the reason that we're unable to deal with them in a lot of ways is just denial. And we just have to get past that denial. We have to get, you know, deeper into the understanding of what identity politics means to the people who have co-opted it.
Well, there's no doubt that the class struggle inside the United States is the national struggle, or the struggle around race, and it's the class struggle is the urban struggle. And the urban struggle is one definitely around the issue of national oppression, of racism in this society. So for anybody to consider themselves left and not pay particular attention to the role of racism in trying to think about ways to tackle national oppression and racism and its manifestations. And so one of the responses of that is the culture coming out of oppressed communities and the power of what that could mean.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think the thing that hip hop offers is sort of a way to, I mean, at its best, of course, you know, because, you know, there obviously are, you know, many, many issues that we've got to work out. Haven't been able to work out the gender question, haven't been able to work open up the conversation of homophobia within in the way that we need to. But, you know, at its best, hip-hop offers a way to be able to understand and sort of build empathies and solidarities, you know, across you know, race and across gender and across sexualities and you know, and imagine for us, you know, the kind of future that we can get to. That's the thing that's been lacking, I think, the most at this particular period, is the imagination of what a better world can be and the dissemination of those kinds of visions. I mean, what the restructuring of the media entertainment complex has done over the last 20, 30 years has been basically to privatize our imaginations and then to subdivide our imaginations into baskets of goods that fit the lifestyle that, you know, the corporations want to sell back to us. And, you know, that's the mystification that we see at this particular moment in history. And to uncover that is the kind of thing that art is supposed to do. And I think that at different points in time, you know, hip-hop is able to do that brilliantly, you know, almost seemingly without trying. And that's why I think I'm still, after all these years, you know, sort of still a big advocate of hip-hop, always ready for that next surprise that hip-hop is going to throw.
Well, we're talking with Jeff Chang, author of Can't Stop, Won't Stop, on just hip-hop, the urban struggle, and the role of culture as a weapon. So let's just talk about that in terms of what's on your playlist or your iPod list or your iTunes and that's been able to capture your imagination.
Well, you know, one thing I want to say is too, and I could talk for hours about that. That's the first thing. But before I start, I want to just mention, too, that hip-hop is not just about rap music, you know.
That's
something that I think has been obscured, you know. So even for folks that want to believe, we get sidetracked into this discussion of hip-hop solely as rap music because that's the thing that's, you know, most prominently on offer from the corporations. It's the thing that's pushed at us by Clear Channel or Viacom, you know. But if you really want to get to the real core thing, you got to look at hip hop as it's lived as a local experience, a neighborhood type of culture on the daily basis, you know. So if you're talking about whatever, poetry slams in your neighborhood, you're talking about the community center down the block where, you know, girls are learning how to DJ after school or that kind of thing, or the B-Girl B competitions and conventions that they hold in Minneapolis every year. These kinds of things are happening all over the world. And out of that, fantastic art is getting created in theater, in dance, in literature, you know what I mean, in poetry, in photography, in graphic design, in all these different types of areas. And that's the stuff that really keeps me excited a lot more than the rap stuff does. Or I should say, in addition to what the rap stuff does. But, you know, for me, I think a lot of the Asian American artists that are doing their thing, Blue Scholars has got a great record out. Bamboo has a great record out. You know, there's a lot of great music that's being made. Folks like the Lifesavers have been really inspiring to me. Obviously, Dead Prez and Immortal Technique and a lot of these different types of folks are keeping the message alive and pushing it out there. Talib Kweli's got a great record out. I could go on and on and on, you know. There's just a lot of fantastic rappers that are out there. But I would just encourage all your listeners to check out what is happening in the theater, you know what I mean, with artists like Sarah Jones or Danny Hawk. You know, what's happening in dance with people like Rennie Harris. You know, what's happening in books and literature, you know, with people like Danielle Smith or Adam Mansbach or Uni Diaz, you know, Juno Diaz, you know, there's just amazing things that are occurring and stuff that refreshes my excitement every day.
So you were talking about the hip-hop four elements, the b-boying, the DJing, the emceeing, and the graffiti. So let's switch a little in terms of you're now talking about the other inspirations that hip-hop gives you and you see reverberated back in culture and the very myriads of manifestations. So let's move to talk a little bit about your companion book to Can't Stop, Won't Stop, mm-hmm. Total Chaos, mm-hmm. which is exactly the artist that you've been naming. Talk about hip-hop's influence in the other aesthetics inside culture.
Well, I think, you know, a lot of what's happened since hip-hop became, I guess, sort of jumped the borders, you know, from New York to the rest of the U.S. and then finally, you know, around the world, is that it's all about the kind of the pursuit of style and the thing of I'm going to do something that's never been done before. I'm going to do something that you know, my other competitors can't touch. You know what I mean? And so there's been a desire on the part of hip-hop folks to continue to move into different spaces and take those over. You know, if the laws and the sort of trends that have been occurring government over the last three decades have been about containing folks, hip-hop arts is about expanding and filling every possible space that you can possibly fill. And so I think that it was natural to see people begin to innovate, to take hip-hop from dancing in the parks, the community centers, to, you know, the theater stage. People like Rennie Harris, of course, producing really, really deep pieces, amazing pieces about discussing urban violence and, you know, how one comes into his own sense of masculinities and the hard armor that one has to put on, and critiquing, you know, the ideas of sexism and homophobia that arise within that process by using, you know, the popping form of dance. I mean, that's just, it's really amazing type of stuff. You know, Danny Hawk's got a new play that he's about to debut in New York City called, you know, To the Break of Dawn, where he's getting into the globalization of hip hop. And I think it just goes on and on and on. I can name you 100, 200, 300 artists if we had the time, of people that I would recommend people, you know, check out. Justin Bua out there in Los Angeles doing, you know, paintings of street life, you know, representing his childhood. Brian Cross talking about the linkages between rhythms in the African diaspora, from turntablists in Los Angeles to drummers in Sao Paulo, you know, in his new movie Brazilian Time. You know, it goes on and on, and it doesn't stop, I think.
Mm. Well, then this, you know, the theme of today's show is Asians in hip-hop. Can you talk about just the Asians' contribution to hip-hop in terms of all that, not just the music, but in terms of the hip-hop as a culture and a movement and a lifestyle?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I came to hip-hop in the late 70s, early 80s, as hip-hop was becoming commercialized. And, you know, for me growing up in Honolulu at the time, the generation before us was very much into, you know, what's kind of known now as sort of local music, Hawaiian folk rock music, you know, that spoke to the land struggles and the tenants' rights struggles that were going on during the 70s. During the 80s, you know, a lot of the winds that they had made got reversed, and you had a lot of development going on. And I realize now, when looking back on it, that that's why I was really attracted to graffiti. You know, all these buildings, all this concrete coming up. So it made perfect sense for me to want to take a spray can and, you know, spray paint my name or tag or that kind of thing on the side of that. And seeing other kids doing it was just unbelievably liberating. And I think that in many ways, you can talk to pretty much a whole generation of Asian Americans, and they'll have a story like that. You know, they would have been at a DJ competition and saw some folks doing the thing, and they thought, wow, you know, maybe I can't b-boy or b-girl, but I can sure play those records. I can sure learn how to scratch. And, you know, then suddenly you have a huge movement of turntablists, Los Angeles, or out here in San Francisco and Daly City, you know, that are transforming the game on an international basis. And I think now you look at what's happening, not just in the U.S., but, you know, sort of the all around the world. You know, the South Koreans are the folks that are considered the B-boys and the B-girls to beat, you know, in the world. And that just influences, again, another generation of young folks out here, Filipino, Korean, Cambodian, whatever, you know, to find their particular voice through hip-hop culture. The Asian hip-hop summits that go on in Los Angeles every year, you know, the tours that kind of happen, the development of the different scenes, the rise of movies, you know, Todd and Jin put a movie together about Asian Americans going to, you know, going back to China. You know, there's a lot of activity that's getting bigger and bigger, I think, every day. And I think that it's really interesting stuff because it allows us to begin to understand where people want to take, you know, this concept of what it means to be yellow or brown in the U.S. And how people are going to express themselves and create new communities around that. It's really nothing less than the birth of a new sort of Asian American and Pacific Islander identity that you see going on in the art that's being created by many of these brilliant young folks.
Well, you know, in the book, you often talk about hip hop as the soundtrack of your life, and you've been weaving that in terms of your growing up in Honolulu. Where is the soundtrack going? I mean, in terms of where do you think you've talked a bit about where the aesthetics of hip hop is taking form, but what do you think the future is for hip hop as we see the growing commercialization of the music? And then we talk about, you know, the street life and being able to capture in raw form the urban experience. But as it gets more and more commodified and the bling starts happening, where do we look for the future?
Well, I think we look to the local movements, you know, we look to the neighborhood movements that are really the source of hip-hop's vitality. I mean, this is the thing that all corporate folks, all the capitalist folks want to commodify, is this regeneration process that occurs literally from the corner, you know, to the school yard, you know, to the community center on up. And it turns over every 3 to 4 years. There's a whole new style, a whole new dance, a whole new way to rap, a whole new way to perform that gets created by young folks that's happening right now, even as we're speaking. And I think that's the X factor. That's the thing that folks that run these sort of globalized corporations have figured out can generate a lot of excitement and interest and money around the world. And to a large extent, what's happened is that they've begun to kill the golden goose in a way. The music industry is in a bad way, but hip-hop has been definitely in a bad way. There were 90 million rap albums that were sold in the U.S. in 2001, and last year only 59 million albums were sold. You know, it's a drop of whatever you can do the math, you know, nearly half, you know, as much sales. And, you know, it's because the music industry has carefully and wittingly choked off every source of creativity to try to milk it of money, you know. And so you've got the cow that's been milked down to its last drop, you know, and the calves are getting killed at younger and younger ages, you know, to for feed and stuff. But I'm not that pessimistic about it. A lot of people are saying, look, you know, that means that hip hop is dead. And I just had an album last year called Hip Hop is Dead. I see folks walking out here on the street that prove that hip hop is very much alive, and they're reshaping it. And I see organizations like Youth Uprising out here in Oakland, you know, that are taking hip hop and using that to develop young minds, you know, to be very sharp about the, you know, their rights, and as well, you know, to try to go ahead and take them. You know, the Ella Baker Center out here in the Bay Area is another example. There are countless examples. Kim McGillicuddy and her folks down there in Los Angeles, it's, you know, the grassroots is thriving, and young folks are making the connection between culture and politics quite separate of anything that's, you know, formal coming down from any kind of organized party, whether it be the Democratic Party or any other kind of party. And that's exciting to me. That's, again, regenerating to me. It's something that, you know, keeps me interested in watching what's going to happen next. And, you know, and my job is to kind of document that. So I'm never at a lack of things to talk about or cover, because it's always going on.
Well, thank you so much, Jeff. For folks that want to get in touch with your book or find out more about it, you've got a website. Can you hook us up with
it? Sure. You can check it out at www.cantstopwontstop.com or totalchaoshiphop.com.
Again, that was www.cantstopwontstop.com or www.totalchaos.com. We've been talking with Jeff Chang, author of Can't Stop, Won't Stop, A History of the Hip-Hop Generation, and Total Chaos, The Arts and Aesthetics of Hip-Hop. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be back with Geologic from Blue Scholars and Skim, your very own in Los Angeles. Rock, rock on. What's the scenario?